Welcome to SCOTUS Cast. On April 15, 2008, the court decided Midwestifico v. Illinois Department of Revenue, ruling that under the Commerce and Due Process Clauses, the test for whether Illinois could tax Meade's gains on the sale of Lexus was whether the asset being sold, Lexus, was a unitary part of a business that Meade conducted in the taxing state, rather than, as the Illinois courts ruled, whether Lexus served as an operational function in Meade's business. Eileen O'Connor, a partner in Washington, D.C.'s Pillsbury, Winthrop, Shaw, and Pittman, discusses the case. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. O'Connor.
Greetings. This podcast is about the Supreme Court's April 15, 2008 decision in Midwestifico v. the Illinois Department of Revenue. If you've been a lawyer for any length of time, you will probably recognize Meade, now Midwestifico, as the one-time owner of the LexisNexis electronic research service so many of us use on a very regular basis. And it is Meade's disposition of LexisNexis in 1994 that gave rise to this case. At issue are the taxes the state of Illinois imposed on Meade's billion-dollar gain on that disposition. Two challenges often made to state taxes are that they violate the Due Process Clause or the Commerce Clause of the United States Constitution. The Due Process Clause requires that, for a state to tax a person, property, or activity, there must be a link or connection between the state and what it wishes to tax. This is the nexus requirement. That's nexus, N-E-X-U-S, not to be confused with the N-E-X-I-S of LexisNexis, the disposition of which gave rise to the case. The Commerce Clause requires that the tax not discriminate against nor burden interstate commerce by imposing multiple or unfairly apportioned taxation. Taking the nexus and apportionment requirements together, the test becomes a variant of the cost-benefit analysis. It is a tax-benefit analysis. That is, does the tax the state seeks to impose bear a fiscal relationship to the protection, opportunities, and benefits the state provides? If the answer to this preliminary inquiry is yes, the state has given something for which it can ask a return, the next question to be asked and answered is, what may the state tax? To answer this question, the United States Supreme Court more than 100 years ago developed the unitary business principle. Under this principle, a state need not isolate the income-producing activities that occur within the state and tax only those, but may instead tax an apportioned amount of the multi-state business activities. In contrast, a state may not tax activities that occur outside its borders if they constitute a discrete business enterprise that is not part of the unitary business, part of which occurs in the state. Appreciating the history of these rules helps us understand them. Suits challenging the constitutionality of state taxes on multi-state business have a long and distinguished lineage. In 1876, the United States Supreme Court ruled, in state railroad tax cases, that states were not limited in their taxation of railroad companies to the value of tracks situated in the state, but could base taxes on an apportioned value of the multi-state rail system. In 1897, in Adams Express Company v. Ohio State Auditor, it applied the apportionment concept to an express company, think Pony Express, finding it to be a unitary business, even though it lacked the physical unity of wires, like telegraph companies, or rails, because there was the same unity in the use of the entire property for the specific purpose, with the same elements of value arising from such use. Whether an enterprise is a unitary business turns on whether it is functionally integrated, has centralized management, and enjoys economies of scale. I'm pleased to report that two of my partners, Jeff Fesley and Kern Matsubara, literally wrote the book on distinguishing between unitary and non-unitary businesses. It is available from Commerce Clearinghouse. The United States has been called upon many times to apply these principles. In Midwestifico versus Illinois Department of Revenue, it was called upon to review how the appellate court of the state of Illinois had applied its rulings, and it concluded that the court had misinterpreted them. The Illinois appellate court had applied the Supreme Court's 1992 decision in Allied Signal. In that case, New Jersey had sought to tax the gain Allied Signal realized when it divested itself of a minority interest in one business, Bendix, intending, ultimately failing, but intending, to use the proceeds to acquire a business, Martin Marietta, that would be part of its unitary business. The New Jersey Supreme Court upheld the tax, concluding it was illogical in the modern business environment to distinguish between apportionable short-term capital investments and all other investments, and therefore that the unitary business principle was, quote, outdated and should be jettisoned, close quote. The Supreme Court reversed and remanded its judgment. It found that Allied Signal's more than two-year investment in Bendix was not short-term, and that its intention to use the proceeds to acquire something that would have become part of its unitary business was not relevant to determining whether Bendix had been part of it. The trial court in Illinois found, largely on the basis of the facts that Need Westvaco and the state of Illinois stipulated, that Need had launched Lexus in 1973 and supported it with capital contributions until it became profitable in the late 1970s. While Need provided oversight to Lexus, it did not control its day-to-day affairs. Need was headquartered in Ohio, Lexus in Illinois. They had separate management teams. They maintained separate manufacturing, sales, and distribution facilities. They had separate accounting, legal, human resource, credit and collections, purchasing and marketing departments. Need managed Lexus's free cash and approved Lexus's annual business plan, as well as significant corporate transactions. Neither Need nor Lexus was required to purchase from the other, and when they did purchase from each other, did not grant each other discounts. Lexus had been a wholly owned subsidiary of Need until it was merged into Need in 1980 so that Need could benefit from its net operating loss carryforwards. Lexus was once again separately incorporated in 1985 until it merged with Need again in 1993. At Illinois' insistence, Need treated Lexus as a unitary business on its Illinois state returns from 1988 to 1994. And finally, Need listed Lexus as a business segment on its financial statements and described itself as engaged in the electronic publishing business. Based on these findings of fact, and applying its understanding of Allied Signal, the trial court concluded that as a matter of law, Need and Lexus did not constitute a unitary business because they were not functionally integrated, nor centrally managed, nor did they enjoy the economies of scale that are the hallmarks of a unitary business. Even so, according to the trial court, Illinois could tax Need's gain on its sale of Lexus because Lexus had served an operational purpose in Need's business. On Need's appeal, the Illinois Appellate Court found that Need wholly owned Lexus, determined its corporate form, retained its tax benefits and controlled its free cash, described itself in its financial statements and regulatory reports as engaged in electronic publishing, and as developer of the world's foremost information retrieval service. On this basis, and without reaching a conclusion on whether Need and Lexus constituted a unitary business, the Illinois Appellate Court affirmed the trial court decision. Lexus served an operational function in Need's business, and therefore Illinois could tax Need on its $1 billion gain from the sale of Lexus. The Supreme Court of Illinois denied review of the case. The Supreme Court of the United States granted it. In a unanimous opinion by Justice Alito, it is said that the most junior justice is always assigned to write opinions in tax cases, the Supreme Court vacated the judgment of the Illinois Appellate Court and remanded the case. The court found that the Illinois courts had misinterpreted its Container Corp and Allied Signal decisions. Those decisions did not, as the Illinois courts seem to think, expand the unitary business principle by adding an operational function. Rather, they recognized that an asset that serves an operational function can be part of a taxpayer's unitary business. To illustrate what is meant by the term operational function, the decision cites, as did Container Corp, Corn Products, a 1955 federal income tax case. Corn Products had engaged in futures transactions to hedge the cost of its raw materials. It wanted the hedges treated as investments so that it could enjoy the preferential capital gain treatment on its gains from those transactions. The IRS determined, and the tax court agreed, that because the futures contracts were Corn Products' efforts to guard against future raw materials price increases, they were not investments entitled to capital gain treatment, but rather operational assets. The Second Circuit affirmed, and the Supreme Court did so too. In its decision in Need Westvaco, the Supreme Court attempts to clarify that its rulings in Container Corp and Allied Signal did not install operational function as, quote, a new ground for the constitutional apportionment of extra state values in the absence of a unitary business, close quote. Rather, the Supreme Court's analysis in those cases concerning whether the assets at issue served an operational function was, quote, merely instrumental to the constitutionally relevant conclusion that the asset was a unitary part of the business being conducted in the taxing state rather than a discrete asset to which the state had no claim. Accordingly, the court vacated the decision of the Illinois Appellate Court and remanded the case for proceedings not inconsistent with the opinion. The decision was unanimous. In a concurrence, however, Justice Clarence Thomas reiterated his view, also expressed last year in United Haulers, that the Supreme Court should reconsider its authority to adjudicate interstate apportionment issues, believing the Constitution reserves that right to Congress. But because neither party asked the court to address that issue, and the decision faithfully applies court precedent, Justice Thomas concurred in the judgment. In the final analysis, what we learn from Mead-Westvaco is that the principles relevant to determining the constitutionality of a state tax remain, 1. A state may tax an apportioned amount of an out-of-state value if that value is part of a unitary business that has a connection to the state, and 2. In determining whether a business is unitary, one still looks to the hallmarks of functional integration, centralized management, and economies of scale. Because business practices are continuously evolving, and states' needs to collect revenue are never-ending, this decision is unlikely to spell the end of controversy about whether, how, and what states can tax. The profound interest in this case is demonstrated by the amicus briefs filed. 24 states and the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico joined in filing an amicus brief in support of Illinois. The Multi-State Tax Commission filed its own amicus brief in support of Illinois. Gannett Company filed an amicus brief in support of Mead-Westvaco, as did the Walt Disney Company. According to Gannett's brief, it is presently engaged in litigation on similar facts in a number of states, including Illinois, Maine, and Montana. And Disney's brief tells us that it is engaged in litigation on similar facts in Illinois. It's possible that the decision in Mead-Westvaco, while it helps resolve some litigation presently pending in state courts or in administrative proceedings, might inspire others to bring suit to challenge taxes to which they have been subjected by other states. And what the Illinois Appellate Court will do on remand also remains to be seen.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video from past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at federalistsociety.org/multimedia.